Hey everyone, welcome back to the Film Fund Podcast. I'm your host, founder and executive producer at the Film Fund, Thomas Verity. I'm also an award-winning filmmaker, producer, and film festival judge. I started the Film Fund to give filmmakers an easier, alternative way to get their film funded. Instead of working on a screenplay, crowdfunding campaign, or grant application, you write one sentence pitching your film for a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. There are only a few weeks left in our Winter 2021 Narrative and Documentary Contest, so don't forget to submit your pitch. Check us out at thefilmfund.co to enter your one-sentence pitch for a chance to win up to $10,000 to make your film. And I want to remind listeners that contests do happen regularly, so if you are listening at a later date, check the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Today, we have Tommy Garcia on the show, winner of the Film Fund's Narrative Short Film Contest. Tommy is an award-winning director and filmmaker. His funded short film project, Life Tune, is being released soon. I believe it's currently in post-production. Tommy, thank you so much for coming. Could you give us a brief background yourself?
Thank you for having me. Yes, I am a writer at heart. I kind of fell into directing, or directing fell into me, I don't know. From Orange County, California. It was once known as the place where good Republicans go to die, and now it's just kind of a purpley extension of LA. Grew up around here. Just suburban childhood, making movies with my dad's handy cam and some neighborhood and schoolyard friends. They would always say, "Oh, this is so much fun. We're making movies." And I'd be like, "No, this is serious." And then they'd be like, we don't want to play anymore. I guess I was, back then I was directing, but I didn't think of it as directing. I was just playing with a camera. I thought I wanted to be an actor. And then I discovered myself as a writer. I wrote my first screenplay when I was like 12. It was 70 pages, called House of Spirits.
That's pretty good for a 12-year-old, 70 pages. Good for you.
Yes, I think I had my mom write like the big monologue in the...
Okay.
I write my own monologues now. That actually evolved into one of my feature scripts that I wrote recently. We can get into that more later. I'm a writer at heart, and then kind of got distracted in my teenage years. Thought I wanted to... I became a business major at Cal State Long Beach. Trivia, that's where Steven Spielberg went. I was a meddling business student, and then on a whim I was like, oh wait, I should do film as a minor. That might be fun. I like movies. And then immediately all those childhood memories came flooding back to me of the handy cam and, bossing around my friends. And so I just kind of continued as a writer, was honing that craft, and it was really hard for me to give up my babies to someone else to direct. And so I just kind of wound up directing myself. Because when you're a student making student movies, you're not paying people. So I was kind of doing everything. And I thought, oh, I don't want to be a director. This is terrible. And then when I did my first movie not as a student, and people were actually paid to do their jobs, and I actually got to direct, I was like, oh, I get it, and this is just what I'm meant to do. So now that's what I'm doing. So I don't.
This remote podcasting is always interesting. Always trying not to interrupt people, but tell us about your winning pitch a little bit.
Life Tune, it is the third of my, of this phase of my career, my shorts. This is the third in my, the Tommy trilogy, I would call it. It's a tragicomedy, And actually, it was the winning pitch last year, but then coronavirus happened and things were uncertain. Mm-hmm. Luckily, we had already shot and were in post, so no issues there. But, you know, I just kind of wanted to do it right. And I think it may have been, I think in 2020, people may have been too focused on the tragedy and less on the comedy of it. So I think it feels right that it's in VFX right now. So moving on to the soundtrack and then...
you think now things are kind of opening up a little bit and people are maybe being a little more optimistic that'll influence
Think, yeah, I think it would have just been a little dark, but it's not bleak. I'll say that. It's dark, but not bleak. And, well, it's about a... I don't know if I can share my sentence or if I should go around.
Honestly,
it.
Our policy is that we don't release the sentences until the films are released, but I do that out of respect for the... Well, hang on. I do that out of respect for the filmmakers. I kind of leave it up to them just because some filmmakers are very protective of their ideas and they don't want people to steal them. But if you're comfortable sharing the pitch sentence, we can definitely do that. But if not, we can wait. So I'm going to leave that up to you.
Well, let's see. I'll just change a couple words.
Okay.
A young woman's fantasy collides with reality when her online boyfriend wishes to meet the person she's pretending to be. So, that's obviously a conflict.
Mm-hmm. And then I think the funding use was for post-production, right? In the actual pitch you submitted.
Yes. Yeah, there was that Adobe Cloud subscription, which definitely helped with some of the promo materials. And it's just been nice. You've been getting me in touch with various post people, which is nice because the hiring process is always very exhaustive for me.
Yeah, we always try to connect people wherever we can. Tommy needed some post-production help and VFX work, so I linked him up with Maestro Filmworks, who sometimes sponsors a prize with the film fund. So we know them pretty well. Happy to connect people there. Tommy, what inspired you to make the film?
Well, it kind of took me back to being in middle school, which was kind of the Wild West days of the internet, like AOL Instant Messenger and chat rooms and
Do you remember
all that.
Your AIM screen name?
I think it was, there were a few. I think it was FV Beach Dude, FV for Fountain Valley, where I grew up. So I guess, well, being a fat gay kid in middle school, life isn't so fun. So I would kind of create different personas on the internet. And just pretend I would be someone else. Later on, you know, I came into myself and, you know, stopped doing that. not only because, you know, morally it's just not something you should do, but also just because I came, you know, to appreciate myself as a person. And there was no need to kind of create this facade. But those years always stuck with me, and that was, I think, before the term catfish came into use. I think it was the documentary that that kind of coined the term. So, yeah, there was a lot of coverage in the media about people who do that, and I was always very interested by those stories because these people do, you know, they're online deceiving people and you just think, oh, what a terrible person who would do that. But then you kind of delve into these people's stories and realize how terrible often their lives are, you know, so horrible. You know, they experience things you wouldn't wish on anybody. And they kind of, as a result, wind up doing something ethically, you know, questionable themselves. So I just kind of, the whole morality, that whole gray area of, you know, just because you've been mistreated doesn't mean you can mistreat others, but how do you kind of break this cycle? So, yeah, I was always influenced by that, and that's how the main character of Fran kind of came to be. And, well, I'll keep this part secret because we can't reveal everything, but the kicker was modern technology. So I was kind of inspired by, you know, the various chat apps, and especially with the pandemic, you know, we're always communicating online. And some of the modern technology fused with those experiences of middle school and the whole idea of catfishing, and it kind of evolved into a life tune.
That's awesome. Everyone, as either a writer or a filmmaker or a creative, we're always putting part of ourselves, I think, in our characters. And it seems like you definitely did this a little bit with Life 2 and used your experiences growing up to influence the story. So I just always find it so interesting, people's backgrounds, where they come from, how they dealt with, you know, maybe trauma in their life and how that influences the stories they tell. And it's always just so interesting. And I think it's a great film and really sends an interesting message to the people watching it. About the film fund, what are your favorite things about the film fund?
The other good thing, you kind of validated myself, because, you know, you're with a project for so long and you're like, is it actually good? Am I just crazy? So it's nice to have that validation. You seem to like where I'm going with this. I guess the film fund, I like that it doesn't really beat around the bush, especially as a writer with screenplay competitions. You know, you'll be working on something, even if you consider it kind of like a quiet indie movie, and you'll just be, you know, I'm a struggling perfectionist, so I'll be working on all those little nitty-gritty details where I'm thinking, oh, even if you don't consciously perceive these all these little nuances, you know, they're there. But, you know, in competitions, they don't care. Like, they're just like, right. what's the log line? What's the gist of it? You know, is the concept interesting? Like, who cares about the script? We'll make it better later. So it kind of gets to the point of that. I like that. Obviously, I like not having to fill out, you know, the whole applications with grants and, you know, writing the essay, which again, you put all this detail into, when really it just comes down to what's the elevator pitch? They make you do all these things and they are just like, well, if we don't like the pitch, then like, screw all that.
Yep.
So
yep. I mean, grants have their place, screenwriting contests have their place, and I think they're excellent avenues for funding. But we like to offer an alternative, be a little bit more direct, like you said, not beat around the bush. We just tell me what the hell your film's about and tell it to me in a sentence, and we'll judge how compelling it is.
Yeah, and the thing about contests and festivals about and all that, you know, you can you know, go broke applying to everything that comes up. But over time, you kind of start narrowing it down to, okay, what should I submit to? What's worth my time and my money? And you just kind of find your own way of doing things. And I'm glad the film fund was able to fit into all that.
We're happy to be a part of your project. Happy to help. Yes. Talk to me about filmmaking and some of the films you've made. What were some challenges you ran into in either production or post-production, pre-production, anything?
There's always problems. Could think of a multitude of problems. You know, it's just kind of, I always say when nothing goes right, goes left. You kind of just, when it seems like you've tried everything and nothing's working, there's always something you can think of outside the box to right the ship. What was that Project Greenlight, that one show? there was a, it was kind of sad because they picked this one director who was set on shooting digital instead of film. I was like, I don't think anyone will care. But anyway, so one of the
I think I saw that one. He wanted to shoot on film, not digital, right?
Yeah, and that was kind of, you know, they had locked down locations and all this stuff, and he was stuck on this one thing. So yeah. I think that show was kind of made more for entertainment as opposed to anything else. But anyway, veering away. So there was this one producer that was talking about the pivot, which is something that always happens when you're shooting. You know, as a director, you kind of get set on your vision and, you know, I have to stick to the vision. And then at some point in production, there's something comes up that threatens to derail your vision. And most of the time it can't even be avoided. So you kind of just have to think outside the box. Like my last short I did before this one, Discretion, you can find it on Amazon. There was this one scene that had to take place at a deserted library. And I won't go into details, but I'll just say if you watch it, it's the critical scene of the movie. So it had to take place in the parking lot of this deserted library. And I was like, oh, it'll be magic hour. The light will be fantastic. Which is funny because in Life Tune, I accidentally shot a key scene in magic hour, not intending to. So that's just how life works. And so I was set on this library, you know, I would see libraries in my sleep. I'd be driving down the street and I'd be like, is that a library? And eventually it was clear that this library situation wasn't going to happen. And I found an alternate location. I'll still be vague. But I realized that this location really didn't have a critical effect on the story. You know, the theme, the character arcs, they were all still preserved. And, you know, once I got off this specific library, things worked out and much better than I think they would have otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I was actually, with Life Tune, I actually wrote multiple endings. I foresaw the pivot and I was like, okay, I don't know if this ending is going to happen how I want it to. So I wrote an alternate ending just in case, and we weren't going to use it until like the week before. There was some issue, you know, you're always thinking, what catastrophe is awaiting me? Mm-hmm. And sure enough, the catastrophe started to present itself, and I was like, oh, I was ready for you. So then I plugged in that alternate ending I had written just in case, and actually it's a way better ending.
That's great. So I think a lesson there is not only be flexible with your vision, but be prepared to be flexible with your vision. Because it seems like you had another ending in your back pocket ready to go.
Yeah.
That's really awesome.
And, you know, it's not even about changing your vision. It's just about distilling it to what your vision truly is. Because, you know, you get hung up on all these certain details or, oh, I want this shot. Oh, I want this to happen this way. But then you have to ask yourself, is that really critical to the vision?
Exactly.
Yeah. So if you know your story, your characters, your theme, then when it comes down to it, circumstances will kind of reveal what is absolutely necessary to your vision and what is, you know, just stuff you want to do.
I totally agree with that. And I think in that distillation process, you have your vision and how you think you need to get to that vision, but then you also have an entire cast and crew who can help you get to that vision too. And by listening to them and maybe being a little bit flexible in your approach, they can help you see that vision a little bit more clearly, right?
Yeah. And I'm always asking people on set, what do you think of that? Like, what do you think of this? Do you like this?
And I think, you know, as a director, there needs to be a line like you can't always ask everybody everything. You can't always, you have to fight for your approach sometimes too. But I think talented directors know how to strike that balance and be like, okay, I'll listen to the cinematographer here. or no, like, damn it, this is how I want to do it, and I'm doing that, I'm sticking to my guns.
Well, and, you know, just, you know, you ask people their opinions and take their advice, that doesn't mean you listen to every, well, I mean, you listen, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean, like, you do everything they say. Sometimes, right. Sometimes you need to hear someone else's opinion to validate your own.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, am I sure about this? And then you hear some of the alternatives and you're like, well, actually, I was right about that. So,
well, your idea sucks, so I'm going to go with mine.
Well, it's not even about does it suck or does it not, but like, does it, so you know deep down, like, if something works or if it doesn't. So, mm-hmm. and it's not like they're wrong and you're right, but you just kind of have to go with your gut as a director mm-hmm. on these things, and you just know, like, oh, that strikes me as right. That's mm-hmm. what's needed, or oh, that's a good idea, but, you know, maybe that doesn't necessarily work for this. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's very collaborative, and, you know, taking other people's advice and opinions doesn't mean, you know, doesn't diminish you in any way. And in some cases, like, especially with the cinematographer, you know, I'm very much an actor's director.
Okay.
The actors are kind of they're my tools, like my camera equipment. And with the cinematographer, you know, I don't pretend to know what they do, or, mm-hmm. you know, that I respect you. That's why I picked you, because right. I trust your opinion. So, yeah, it's just about respecting people and what they do, and then they'll respect you and what you do, and you can always, you know, trade ideas, you know, brainstorm, and sort of, like I said, you have your vision and circumstances come into play. You know, that's what movie making is all about. It's a collaborative process, and whatever is true to the vision will come through, and whatever wasn't necessary to achieve that vision will kind of just fizzle away naturally, and you're just left with your film. And I'm very happy with what we wound up with on Life 2.
I love that. I love that approach to filmmaking. I think it's really a good point you make. You can listen to people, but you don't have to listen to that. You don't have to go with the way they want to do it, and it helps you really get to that end vision. That other film you were mentioning, the one you can watch on Amazon, did you take that to festivals?
Yes. I actually learned a lot about the festival circuit with that one. I premiered it at the British Film Institute, actually. BFI Flare. It's like I think it's the biggest LGBT film festival in England, actually.
Did you go to England?
I did. And
oh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, so I don't know. The British, they love my sense of humor, apparently. But yeah, so I actually didn't realize what an important film festival it was at the time until I got there, and we were at the BFI. It's off the Thames River, and, you know, they're going on about the history and Bette Davis and all these legendary stars, you know, walked these halls, and you look at their museum they have there, and you're like, oh, this is like the official film body of the UK. So yeah, that was the biggest festival, and there were some other festivals it got into, but I kind of learned a lot about film festival strategy. So okay, this is very instructive of where I was at this time in my life. So it's playing at Discretion. It's playing at this huge theater at the BFI, and the theater is completely packed.
Oh wow!
And I was just like, oh my god, like, how are they gonna receive this? And it was just the best reaction you could ever hope for with the film. They laughed and, you know, were and gasped and applauded at all the moments you thought, oh, I don't know if anyone will catch this.
Right.
And every single, all of those moments they caught. And it was just, it was an unbelievable reaction. However, I also learned about some of my mistakes with film festival strategy. I feel like I kind of started big and then worked my way down when maybe it should have been the reverse, kind of snowballing into those bigger festivals. So I have this huge rapturous response, but all I'm focused on are the things I did wrong.
Right.
So I was alone, and you know, people tell you, oh, everyone should travel alone at some point in your life. And I'm glad I did, because I learned I hate it. even though I'm kind of a solitary person in my everyday life, when I travel, I just like to have at least one other person there to like bounce off with ideas. Mm-hmm. If I'm alone on a trip, I have way too much time to think. So
you're just a crazy guy talking to yourself then. With no
yes,
about your ideas.
Yes. Well, no different from when I'm here at home. But so I have this huge rapturous response, but all I'm focused on are, oh, I should have done this, I should have done that. And I was all like depressed on this trip. And later on, I was like, oh, that was actually an amazing experience. But the whole time I'm just focused, oh, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? And I was just kicking myself. And then on the day I was to fly back, I think that was the day of the, there was like a bombing in Belgium, I think. And the airport traffic was really intense, like way more intense than I had expected. And so I missed this flight, but I was in line with, I think it was this other film guy and a lingerie model who I had never met. I had never met before. But we all missed the same flight, and we're all, like, you know, trying to rebook and all that, and we're, like, just kind of chatting and stuff, and we realized that the next flight wouldn't be for a couple of days, and the guy had, I guess, bonus Hilton points, and we were like, oh, I guess we should just hang out together. We might as well stick this out. And I think we kind of picked up on that we were, you know, kind of chill people. And otherwise, I'm sure we would have just gone our separate ways. But we kind of, you know, we kind of gel, so we can do this. And so we all got a hotel room together.
Oh, wow.
And then this...
And he paid for it with his points?
Well, I mean, I think it was like a really low rate. So we were all... Okay. It was like all an easy thing to split. And then this girl was like, I need to get weed. Like, where can we get weed? And then I was like, oh, thank God. I was like, oh, thank God I don't have to be that person. So then we go on an adventure on the outskirts of London. I really shouldn't be telling this story.
But, whatever. We'll mark this episode as mature or whatever.
But so then so we got what we were looking for. And then we kind of found this spot outside the airport, like hidden among the trees and in the dark, looking out on this lonely road to the airport. And we were just kind of, you know, sneaking away and being bad kids. And all of a sudden I started getting this idea. I was like, this kind of sounds like a movie. And then maybe we're like outside the airport doing something we're not supposed to, and then we witness some like horrible plot unfolding. So, and all of a sudden I was just so inspired with all these ideas. So basically, I'm sure I veered way off whatever we were talking about, but it was just
we were
funny.
Talking about film festival strategy.
Well, it was just funny because, you know, you go to these festivals and it's all like, oh, you go to the cocktail hour and it's all fun, but, you know, I was kind of down on myself that trip, and everyone's all like, oh, what do you do? What are you working on? Oh, that, I don't care. This is what I'm working on. And it's all just very hollow and shallow, and I was just feeling completely uninspired. Not, I wasn't feeling what I had, whatever I had hoped to feel on that trip. And then I have this crazy experience with these people I had never met before, and just all of a sudden had all these story ideas, and the writer in me was just like, oh, I gotta write this down for later. So, yeah, veered way off from film festival strategy. But I guess as a filmmaker, what I can boil this down to is just do what makes you happy, but kind of follow, just kind of follow the path however it leads you. You know, don't expect the path to look a certain way or feel a certain way. You know, things happen, sort of like with when you're on a set, you know, things happen that you can't control, but all you can control is what's my vision, what are my goals, and they'll steer you the right way sooner or later.
Mm. And now with that project, is that something you raised funding for? Are you self-funded? Well, how did you do that?
For Discretion, there was a Kickstarter for at least a portion of the budget, and then the rest was self-funded. Mm. So,
what were some of the challenges with raising funding for that?
Just the whole thing. I think you were talking about this in one of your other podcasts. You know, short films are just hard to get funding for in general. Yeah. So, and that was my first project made not as a student. So it was all very rude shock to me. I guess just convincing people that you're not crazy and that you have a vision. And so that always goes back to your vision. Like if it's strong enough, then you'll kind of weather the storm, however it comes. So yeah, crowdfunding, it was a good thing to say that I've done before. I don't know that I would ever do it again, but it's one of those things that you can say like, oh, I did that. So it is definitely a good humbling experience for any filmmaker to do at some point. So yeah, it just depends on the project. There's always different challenges to everything. And
Convincing people to give you money is never easy. And then trying to convince them to give you money when there's no return on that investment with a short film is even tougher.
I pretty much wound up self-funding all my shorts, but you know, there are definitely advantages to that. You know, if it's your money, like even if things, you know, fall apart, you're like, well, it's just me. Versus if it's someone else's money, you're like, ooh.
Yeah, that's a good point too
about that.
We've talked about vision, we've talked about film festivals, we've talked about distilling that vision. So now to distill all of the advice you've been talking about into one nugget, for lack of a better word, what's some advice you would give to filmmakers out there?
Don't do it. I'm just kidding. Save yourself.
Do anything else.
Well, I would say just kind of follow the patterns in your life, sort of like how I was saying, you know, I got distracted in my teen years, self-discovery, and then thinking I wanted to, and then majoring in business in college and thinking, seeing all the jobs they're talking about, thinking, I don't really want to do any of this. Even if I may be good at it, I feel like I'll wake up in my 40s and like jump out a window. But then I kind of look back on the patterns in my life, whether it was playing with the other kids in my dad's handy cam or writing my my ghost script at 12, and just things always kept coming back to movies. So it was almost like I was running away from the movies, but they kept chasing me. So if it's really what you want to do, it's what you're going to do. Like, it was almost like there was something in my head that would subconsciously sabotage any opportunity I had to do something else. And you know, at the time to think, oh, I screwed this up, oh, I blew that opportunity, and then you realize, oh, it was all in service of film. It kept coming back to that. So, if it's what you want to do, you know, you'll do it. And if you're doing it, sort of like I would say, like, don't get distracted. You know, just stick to the vision and don't... To stick to the vision, but don't get set on how things are going to turn out or how they're going to shape up. You know, if you're true to yourself, then what the end product is going to be is something you may not have envisioned in the first place, but in the end, you know, that is my movie. That's my baby. So, and again, if nothing goes right, go left.
I love that. Anything in store for the future? What are the plans for the future? I know you're releasing Life Tune right now. It's in post.
Well, this is kind of how my pattern shakes out. You know, I'll work on a set and I'll just go crazy and making sure everything is perfect, even if it's not what I initially envisioned, as we were just talking about, making sure everything is up to snuff, I would say. You know, dealing with all the crises and all that and making it all happen, and then when it's all over, I'm like, I just want to go back into my writer's cave and never come out. And so then I'll go into my writer's cave for an extended period, and then eventually I'll start to get stir crazy, and then I'll just be like, I kind of want to be on a set again. I kind of want to be with people. So the
future plans are release Life Tune, retreat to the writer's cave, and then go on set again?
Well, I already have been in the writer's cave. I mean, it's weird how it worked out. I finished Life Tune, and then lockdown happened as I was already going into the writer's cave. So it was kind of interesting how that worked out. I've written 3 feature scripts, and so it's kind of just fine-tuning those. I wrote one script in, I have this one script, it's a stoner dramedy, I would say. And it's centered around a kid who's, well, a college kid who has just graduated and kind of face plants into adult life. And then his father is diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and he has to step up and save the family restaurant. And I actually wrote that pre-COVID and thought, and you know, there was it started to go some places. It made the first round of the Nickel Fellowships, and I think was semi-finalist in some other contest. But I always felt like it needed something more. And the recession of 2008 was kind of in the background of the story. Like, the father's restaurant was never able to fully recover from that. But it was getting a little too far in the background. And then COVID happened, and I thought, oh, that's the missing piece. So adding that back in there. And then the ghost script I was talking about that I worked on, my 12-year-old script, that actually evolved into the last script I wrote. It's a horror film, obviously. But it kind of evolved from a standard haunted house script into sort of like an Airbnb gone awry. And it's actually set in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. Okay. And
not too far from where we're in Philly here.
Yeah. Well, the family in the script is from Philly, And there's kind of this tension when the city people come in to this little town.
Oh, so I love it.
All the mountain people, they're kind of like, who are these city folk?
Hey, and if you need a consultant on how to get the Philly accent accurate, call me up. I'd be happy to help. Well, they always mess it up.
Well, it's funny because I actually, the last time I was in Pennsylvania, I was a little kid. I just have vague memories of my parents pointing out the fields of Gettysburg and talking about the history. And I'm like, does our hotel have a pool? So I really had no memories of Pennsylvania. So I found, this is like tech consulting on a budget. I just found on Craigslist some people in Pennsylvania to kind of fill me in on, you know, is this all accurate and whatnot? And it's amazing how well it worked out, because one of the people I talked to was a retired detective.
Oh, wow.
And one of the main characters is a detective.
So no way. Oh, that's perfect.
Oh, well, this is perfect. So, I'm really excited about that script. It's a good old horror movie. I'll probably do the rest. I'm probably going to focus on the restaurant first, just because I think that's more of a micro budget. And then there's another screenplay I wrote in college that I kind of wrote off as the first pancake. I don't know if you've ever made pancakes, but the first one always gets screwed up. so I kind of wrote it off as the first pancake. And then recently, there was this whole social media aspect to it. And back in college when I wrote it, Facebook was kind of viewed as, you know, connecting everyone. Like, we're all one community. And then in years since, social media, I guess the dark side of it has kind of revealed itself, as you will find out in Lifetune. And so now I'm kind of thinking, I think there's potential here. So, yeah, I'm definitely not self-funding the features. So I'm just going to tour those around, fine-tune them a bit more, but I'm very excited. They're a natural extension of what I've done with my shorts. And so still in the cave, but I think I'll be emerging soon.
I mean, it sounds promising. You said the one made it through the first round of the Nickel Fellowship, so that's pretty impressive. So keep up that momentum, right?
Yes. And like I said, sometimes it's just validation is all you need. Like, oh, okay, I'm not crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
this is good.
yep, absolutely. Validation, or even just like a kick in the butt too. It's like, oh, okay, I can do this. I know from personal experience, that's always been very important. I was on the phone with this former professor of mine / mentor the other day. And I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. You know, he's like, why don't you just storyboard that script you haven't stopped talking about for a while. I was like, oh yeah, I could do that. And then I sat down and I storyboarded it. And I was like, wait, oh yeah, I forgot I know how to do this. So validation is always so important.
And following the pattern, like you said, you had already been working on it anyway. So it's kind of
exactly
like, what am I?
That
what
goes
am
back
I,
to what you said.
Yeah, what am I doing without being prompted? Like, what am I doing without thinking? And you kind of look back and find these patterns and you're like, okay, I should do this.
Well, Tommy, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. And I want to remind everyone that our current contests are now open. So you can go to the website, check them out. I want to thank everyone for tuning into the podcast, listening to myself and Tommy Garcia talk about filmmaking and traveling to faraway lands. I want to remind everyone that the Winter 2021 Narrative and Documentary Contests are open for 3 more weeks. So go check out thefilmfund.co to submit your entry, and check out our social media channels where you can find some tips on filmmaking as well as prize details. We have Kitsplit gift cards, Adobe Creative Cloud subscriptions, which is what Tommy won. We have Expressway Cinema Rentals. We got them on board to sponsor another 2-day weekend rental package. So I'm super excited about that. That's the Blackmagic Ursa. Very nice camera, lenses package. And check our website regularly for the most up-to-date information on all this great stuff. Sign up for our email newsletter. Check out the blog filled with great filmmaking producing tips. And we have a new ebook too. I'm plugging everything today. Check out the ebook on the resources page of that website, thefilmfund.co, for great tips on the pre-production process. Okay, plug's over. Thanks everyone for listening. Tommy, did you have anything else you wanted to add before we wrap up?
Facebook.com/LifeTuneFilm for all the latest updates. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Tommy Garcia Film. I think that's it. More to come.
Awesome. More to come. Thanks, Tommy. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.